weigh evidence. Not just the folks who are going to be up here discussing that. So these are the questions that the panelists have been asked, and it's described in Appendix A on your agenda. But I'll just summarize it here. So there are three questions. So the first one, I put causes in green, effects in red up here. So what's the strength of evidence that changes in Chinook abundance cause or do not cause changes in southern resident killer whale vital rates, survival, reproduction, population growth rates? So each panelist will get 5 minutes to talk about that. Second question, what's the strength of evidence that changes in fisheries in the future would cause or would not cause changes in Chinook salmon abundance sufficient to affect southern resident killer whale vital rates? And we'll each have 5 minutes to talk about that. And then for those two questions, what are the most critical data needs and analyses to reduce the key uncertainties affecting management decisions? And what types of evidence could alter or strengthen the conclusions drawn to those first two questions? So that's what they're going to be doing. And so if you think about those questions as well, it gives you a way to sort of hang all this information you'll be hearing during the day. So on the first question, some of the things to consider, and this is in the appendix, Alex Hall, my colleague from ESSA, came across this paper back when we were working on the Cohen Commission as a way, it was called a retrospective risk assessment. It was a way that we helped to organize some information, and it's basically a decision tree that says, well, if you've got a suspected stressor that may have caused some response variable to change, killer whale vital rates, for example, first of all, you have to have a plausible mechanism. Then the critter needs to have been exposed to that stress, and in this case it would be lack of Chinook. There has to be some correlation in terms of when there's less of that stressor around, the animal is doing better, and when there's more of that stress around, the animal is doing worse. So at each stage, if you find, well, there's no plausible mechanism, then it's unlikely that that would be what was causing the change, or there's no exposure to the stressor, well, it's unlikely, and there's no correlation. So there's ways of jumping out of this decision tree and rejecting certain things as not being the likely causes. And then if you come down and say, well, yeah, there is a correlation, then there's these other things that get more and more specific. So, you know, is the stressor at a level which exceeds a threshold that is likely to cause some problem? And maybe in the case of killer whales, if, you know, do you see symptoms either behaviorally or physiologically or in terms of morphologically that would suggest that stress is that mechanism is exceeding some threshold? And is the form, this idea of specificity, this comes out of a toxicity kind of background, but if there's a particular kind of stressor, does it manifest its way in a specific form that makes it more likely that it is that stress as opposed to something else? So if you have sort of a peanut head syndrome, for example, is an indication of shortage of food, you know, that's more likely than if there was like high toxic levels in the blubber, but they were perfectly normal size or something. And then the other thing is, you know, do you have evidence from either a lab or a field experiment to support this mechanism? And if you remove the stressor, does the animal do better? So these are some of the things that we suggested when people were integrating their evidence on the panel that they consider. And if you know, Chinook are not a plausible mechanism for changes in killer whale vital rates, what is the alternative plausible mechanism? So that was just some of the background behind what's in the in the appendix. And then for question two, some things that we suggested people consider. So this is, what's the strength of the evidence that changes in fisheries in the future would cause or would not cause changes in Chinook salmon abundance? So what are the expected changes in Chinook abundance with changes in harvest? We've heard some of that at previous presentations, and we'll probably hear more of that today. What's the form of the relationship between abundance and southern resident killer whale vital rates? Is there any relationship at all? Is it linear? Is it some sort of logistics so that if you're down at very low abundance, maybe you won't see much change in killer whale vital rates until you boost your nook up to a higher level? Or would you see a much faster response even at low Chinook abundance? So what do we know about that? And then lastly, the effects of pinnipeds and other competitors. So anyway, so that's some background to what the panel will be considering this afternoon. I just thought I'd introduce that so everybody's kind of getting the wheels going with their morning coffee. Any questions about what we're doing or where we're going? Where we've been? I learned it was an 18-inning baseball game last night. Some folks were at. With a sad outcome.
So,
which one are we here? Is this it? Yeah. So the first presentation is Ken Warheit from Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife on stock-related catch, age, and size distributions from San Juan Islands.